Grand Bargain, one, it was a term of art that's been used before in political circumstances, most recently when President Obama and then Speaker of the House John Boehner were trying to reach a bargain around reforming our federal tax revenues and reaching accord around the debt ceiling and some other things, and it was a term that was sort of popularized around then. You know, when I use the term here in Delaware, it is around two things. It's around getting our portfolio revenues, some long-term reform of those so they're not as volatile, so they're more responsive to economic growth, more predictable, and that ideally they're as conducive as they can be to economic development. That would be large-scale long-term revenue reform. That would be part one of the grand bargain. Part two, or the piece that I think pulls it together and makes it work, is also on the sort of spending side of the budget equation. So it's, what is it that makes the trend of spending, not the level, because there's lots of fights over how much or how little. That's not what the grand bargain's about. It's not about how much spending or how little spending. It's about how fast can spending grow. It's a different, so there's level and there's trend. And our current budget framework doesn't have any built-in sort of idea of what is a sustainable rate of growth that we can live at, that meets our means and our needs. So if you can sort of combine true revenue reform of our portfolio and spending disciplines long-term sustainable, I think you can get a political consensus that puts us in a place where we can get to what the most important issue is, and that is sufficiency or value.
So are you not talking about cutting spending, or you're talking about reducing the growth of spending?
I'm talking about neither cutting nor increasing spending, nor am I talking about necessarily lowering the current rate of growth that we're in. What I'm talking about is defining a set of economic parameters. Those could be growth in our overall economy as measured by gross state product. That could be growth in our economy as measured by our aggregate personal incomes. It could be measures of inflation, you know, that tell us what price levels are rising at and our population growth. Effectively, you took a basket of economic indicators. You could say these are measures of our needs as well as our means. These tell us as a people how much our resources are, what rate our resources are growing at, and what rate our needs are growing at as a people. If we could harness our budget growth to that, we would at least know that over the long term, we are on a path, a glide path, if you will, that's sustainable. That's not part of our current budget architecture. So that's both, I mean, when people say, hey, when I say discipline, I also mean, to me, sustainability is not just about a ceiling, it's about a floor as well. It's about an agreed upon level that we know meets our needs and is within our means.
To balance the budget, you would have to increase revenue and cut spending. I mean, if you were in charge, you know, what would you do?
So here, the two things you have to understand about the budgeting process today that makes it more chaotic than it needs to, and the grand bargain really does, I'm going to introduce three words that I think if people take away from this, they'll understand what I think we're trying to get at. One thing that a good finance system does is it generates certainty, okay? If we have a test like we have today every year that says 98% plus cash on hand, that's what you get to spend. Well, let's face it, our revenue portfolio moves around with the economy. So any given year, what we can spend is going to be a function of what we take in, which means it's not going to be a nice level stream in the current thing. It's going to bounce around. If our revenue portfolio, the way we actually harvest the taxes that are on the revenue basis that we tax, whether it's personal incomes or corporate, if the way we put our tax scheme on top of that revenue base is it actually exaggerates the volatility, which it does, because we take a narrow stream of it. We take the top of the stream if we rely on more. So you're going to get movement every year just bouncing around. That in and of itself is a massive level of distraction, because in the General Assembly, a 1% or 2% shortfall is massive. But 1% or 2% based on a volatile set of revenue portfolios is going to happen almost every year. So our current system already sets us up for failure, because we spend the entire legislative session either trying to figure out, okay, we got 2% more than we thought, or we got 2% less, and how do we fix that? So one thing that the grand bargain does is it says, let's go back to that sort of test that says, let's combine these economic measures so we spend on a curve that's equal to our means and our needs. And guess what? That is very predictable. It's not bouncing around, because you blend these things all together, and what you end up with is 3% or 3.5% or somewhere that's, you know, a livable level of growth every year, and it's very predictable. It's much less volatile. That in and of itself, that certainty allows the General Assembly to basically plan for the long term. We can't plan for the long term right now. Agencies' budgets could be cut. Agencies' budget could be increased. Nonprofits could be cut. Nonprofits could be increased. That's a hard way to take on long-term challenges. all of the energy gets sucked into just year to year trying to make a little bit of room in the budget one way or another. So smooth it out is number one. Certainty also applies over an economic cycle. What we know, what we've lived through, I'm 50 years old, I've lived through, I think, 5 economic cycles. The economy tends to go up, it reaches a peak, it pops, it contracts, it goes to a trough. Our test allows us to spend effectively 100% all along that time period. So in good times, we just ride the curve up, and then we're supposed to ride the curve down. We can't do that in state government. All those expenses that we buy into on the way up become fixed. We hire people that we can't terminate. We increase salaries. We rent space or buy space. We commit to long-term contracts. We borrow debt. So most of our spending is inflexible. So when you hit that peak and you start contracting, your only choice is to try to trim around the edges and find other sources of revenue. Well, you could have just as easily harvested the revenue in the good time. So our spending, you know, if it averages 3%, why do we live with a budget that allows us to be up 9% one year, down 6% the next, up 2% the next, flat the next? And that's the course of history in just the last 8 years of the Markell administration. So we have these wild swings that if we just had a system of smoothing out, one, by having a more predictable metric that we're following, but two, during the course of economic cycle, harvest the excess revenue in the good time above what that long-term trajectory is, park it away, draw it back in the bad times. That's not part of our current budget architecture. Let me give you one second word. The second word is sustainability. Sustainability is the fact that our current budget test doesn't tell us if we're on a path that is, in fact, within our means over the long term and how it's connected to our needs. It allows us to spend whatever we find. So imagine you in your personal world where you go along and you have a salary and then one year you win the lottery. Would you spend 100% of the winnings and assume that you're going to get the lottery next year? I mean, maybe, but I mean, most people wouldn't say, hey, my base level budget is now 10x what it was last year. But our test effectively allows us to pick up these sources of income that sometimes do occur. We have abandoned property. We have casino revenues. We have things that have been explosive over the past that aren't even sourced from Delaware. We don't even control that have had exceedingly rapid growth. And we've spent 100% of them.
So taking and saving the revenue that you get in good times and using it in bad times sounds like what a rainy day fund does.
People might think it is. But we've had a rainy day fund, a budget reserve account, for 40 years. And when I'm 50 years old, I've seen probably 5 economic cycles or more. How many times do you think in that 40-year period we've used the rainy day fund? Never, because the rainy day fund is not actually built to articulate that it is there to do two things. If we had a real budget smoothing account, it would say two things. Hey, this account is to be used when we have that ordinary bouncing around. You know, every year it might be up a little bit, 1%, or down 2%. You know, if we're on a steady curve of what we think is going to be around 3%, we're still going to bounce around it a little bit. Just no way to take all the noise out of it. That's the nature of the economy, right? But if it's fairly predictable to begin with, and if we have a smoothing account over here on the side, then we can just even out those little 1% or 2% changes from year to year. Second, it would have to say that, though. That's not what our budget reserve account says. Second, it would have to say this is really being built to handle an economic cycle. We know that instead of just being an average of 3% over 10 years, we're going to get explosive growth at the front end of this thing that's in advance, in excess of that. And eventually, it's going to pop and it's going to come down and we're going to have negative growth. And over the course of the whole thing, we know it's going to be 3%. So let's just sit at 3% and harvest all those revenues. Our current budget reserve account is not drafted that way. It doesn't have a constitutional purpose that's clear to our legislature. The people that have been in our legislature, and some of them have been there 40 years, a handful, some have been there 30 years, they really view the budget reserve account as no one knows what it's there for. They know that it is part of our budget architecture, and they fear that if we use it, then we would be downgraded by rating agencies because they would think we didn't have the means to meet our needs. They worry that it's there for something like I'm not being facetious, but I mean, like, you know, like a meteorite striking Delaware, right? Something really unexpected. But it has never been used to meet our needs when we hit really hard economic times. And if you think about it, what you really want a smoothing account for in hard times is because the economy's tanking. When the economy's going down, the last thing you really want government doing is doing the same thing, cutting back and potentially, you know, exacerbating the downturn. What you'd really like to know is your government has put aside the money to finance itself and meet service level needs during that time, so it stabilizes the economy. And, you know, Delaware spends roughly $10 billion flow through the state treasury. It's almost 15% of our economy. So it's not a trivial amount that if government is able to stabilize its operations, and let's remember, we provide the most basic stuff, right? Education, procure health care, roads and infrastructure, safety, security. Like, if we can maintain our ship through these turbulent economic cycles, it's going to help the private economy recover a lot more quickly.
Grand bargain, named after President Obama and his attempt to get this grand bargain with Republican leaders in Congress, didn't succeed. I know that in Illinois, they tried a grand bargain, which also, you know, failed. You know, they spent like 3 years trying to do it. Do you think that it's realistic to think that there could be a grand bargain?
Yeah, because I think those bargains, if you look back at them, were about the levels of revenue or the levels of debt or the levels of spending, right? And that's an issue we have to get through. I said two words earlier, certainty and sustainability. That's what this grand bargain's about. The third rail that's difficult, that's politically challenging for us to reach consensus on sometimes, is what I would call sufficiency. Are we spending enough? Are we spending too little? Our grand bargain is around certainty and around sustainability, not the level of spending, but the trend we're on. If we confine it to those points initially, I think you can get political consensus around that, okay? Because when you talk to, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, conservative, progressives, no one benefits to the chaos, no one. And they realize that the chaos that we create in state government has reverberations into our private economy. You know, when we go to July 3rd with our budget and surprise people about who's getting taxed now or who was getting taxed, or we tell nonprofits we're going to zero out your budget, or we, you know, brewers and realtors and everyone else has no idea what their economic picture looks like. You know, I came for a lifetime in the private sector. One reason I came to state government is because to try to rectify some of this uncertainty. I mean, people don't take risk when they feel uncertain. People take risk and they expand and they grow things when they feel comfortable and when they believe there's at least some level of certainty to their future. So if we can comport ourselves in a more certain way in state government and send that signal that we're not going to surprise you, it has a very positive reverberation to the private sector economy. If we can come together and say the growth rate that we can agree to is measurable, it's outside our control, it's dictated by what the economy is doing over time, and it's fairly predictable, if you can get the concepts agreed to of sustainability and certainty, then you actually can come back at a later date. That's our grand bargain, right? That differentiates it from other grand bargains. You can come back after that and then start to say, hey, in education, are we spending enough? Are we spending too little?
Have you gotten members of the state legislature to buy into this concept?
I was a proponent of the piece of legislation that was passed in the last session that established a new panel to study over the course of this, between July 3rd when we ended the budget and before the legislature comes back into office. We've had three meetings of an advisory panel that's composed of four legislators, one from each caucus, that's composed of our highest financial officers in the state, myself, Secretary of Finance, the Budget Director, Controller General, members of the public, and we have looked at what other states have done around these issues. You know, I use the term grand bargain. They may not have called that in other states where they put budget smoothing accounts into place and reinvented their fiscal controls. That's the term of art they use for what they deem to be a sustainable path. But other states after the Great Recession have reacted to like the difficulty of managing through that challenge and have taken some of these actions. We've also got the Pew Foundation, which is a nonprofit group working with us that has advised several other states and giving us advice around what they recommend based on Delaware's particulars. Because you just can't, this is not a off-the-shelf product. You really have to look at your revenue portfolio, your service level needs. You have to look at what your structural imbalances are, let's say, between those. If healthcare is growing at twice the rate of what your revenues are, you got a problem, right? But there's a toolkit that's going to help us, if we implement it, using the work of this advisory panel, to do the things we spoke about, certainty, sustainability, and ultimately sufficiency, and to make recommendations that hopefully they come out of this panel are either bipartisan or nonpartisan, however you want to look at it, and that have a lot of thought leaders behind it. So those are the recommendations of the advisory panel that I'm on that we hope to make some at least initial recommendations to the governor and the General Assembly immediately upon their return, and our hope is, I believe, to try to have a final report before the end of the first calendar quarter so they can really act upon it in the next legislative session.